I do the same sort of dismantling whiteness in a different context over here. The work is global. I am teaching now 15-year-old kids how to interact with folks that don't look like them. So when a kid comes up to me and they're like, teacher, we want to know if we can use the N-word. How do we call you?
So what is it that you love about being Black?
That's a great question, Nanny Keenan. I love being Black because I'm different from everybody else. And the second reason, because Black people can do anything they set their minds to.
What I like about being Black is just freaking amazing. We are amazing.
Every day is a good day for breathing.
My favorite part about being Black is the originality.
I love being Black because I can put my hair into different shapes and sizes, and nobody can ever tell me how my hair can be.
I do like the food.
When people say Black girl magic, that's for real. That ain't just because we just want to say that. It's real. We magic.
We are so unique in everything that we know.
Go ahead, say it. Please say that.
Listen to my nanny podcast.
Please say Black.
Please say Black.
Please stay Black.
Please say Black.
As I always was Black.
Okay, so on the Please Say Black podcast, we are so excited to have my homie, my newest, latest, greatest friend, Dr. Janaya Perdue from Melanated Stamps. We are so excited. I'm so excited. I want to start this episode by just saying that I stumbled upon your Instagram page and I was like, how do we not know each other? How?
Right. I don't even know.
Because it was like the first time we talked, it was like instant, like, where you been my whole life?
Right. We besties now. We bestie on the internet. It's real. It's so real.
So tell my listeners who you are. What do you do? Like, just give us the do they still say 411?
I don't even know because I live in a cave over here. I don't know what's going on. And I use Instagram and social media because, like, if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't know what anything is happening. Thank you, first of all. I feel so special because, you know, I have my soapboxes. But my name is Janaya Perdue, Dr. Janaya Perdue. I am an educator by lineage, and I've been an educator for, this is my 14th year. I used to teach at the university, then I got bored. And then I noticed at the university that my Black students were not doing well. So then I taught Hard to Love Children in Denver, Colorado for 3 years. That was not my skill set. It's for somebody else. And then I got cussed out by one of my precious children. And I got on the internet and I said, how can I leave America and still make money? And all these jobs for teaching China showed up. And I said, well, I'm gonna go do that. And so I now currently live in Shenzhen, China, across the street from Hong Kong. And I've been here, this is my 4th year as a Black educator, entrepreneur, expat. That's me. Yes.
That's a lot. I just want to go back to you being cussed out by a 4th grader. So
she was bad.
Because what I appreciated is you still gave her, you still named her as Precious. She just was a precious cuss out of.
Cool. She opened her chips and in math class and then wrote bitch in the orange powder on the other kid's desk. And I had to take the chips from her. And
not the orange powder. Not the orange powder.
Woo! And she cursed out my ancestors, my future children, my hairline. She went in, and that's why you got hairy legs. It's because no man wants you. She went in. Oh my God. And I looked at her. She did this every other day, but this one's particular. I said,
no, it's like, you think she had stored it up? Like, she had been like building up the cuss out.
And I told you she had a bad day. I don't know. But today was bad.
Parents who are listening to the podcast, be mindful that your kids might be learning a skill set that you don't want them to have.
He was excellent. And I looked at her and I don't have to do this. And so
then you just left the whole scene. Also, here's another PSA. I am a 40-something woman. Mm-hmm. If I had to cut somebody out tomorrow, I'd have to Google first. I'd have to be like, I need to watch a movie. And that's because I didn't grow up with parents who cursed at home.
We didn't.
You know, and if they did, it was like, damn it. You know, it was like a real fast thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents did make mistakes, but one of them wasn't like cussing me out in grocery stores, right?
Right.
And so I think to this day, this is why, not that I police Black people who cuss, but what I'm saying is that exposure as a child probably, you know, so that's just something for folks to be thinking about. That free PSA.
Yeah. But you know, the thing is like, although teaching the hard to love children is not my skill set, I will send all the money to for other folks to for school supplies so that they can change the world one kid at a time. I do the same sort of dismantling whiteness in a different context over here. And so although I'm not teaching hard to love precious pumpkins, the work is global. And a lot of folks, they were like, why did you leave when you have a doctorate and you can change the Black community and you can do all of it? And I said, yes, I can. And also, I am teaching now 15-year-old kids who have a lot of money. Y'all gonna be nice to China because China has a lot of money. But and they like, I'm teaching these kids how to interact with folks that don't look like them. And that is my work in anti-whiteness and breaking down the systems because these kids aren't ready. And I do that every day. So when a kid comes up to me and they're like, teacher, we have a question. We want to know if we can use the N-word. How do we call you? And I was like, you call me Black. And they're like, but that's a color. I said, yes, it's okay. And or what is it okay to say these words? Because on the internet, it said that we cannot say this. Is that a, yes, you can use this word. You cannot use this one ever. Don't ever call us this. Okay, okay. And so that's it. That idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was just about to say part of the, so for the people who are listening, this episode is really about thinking about what does it mean to be a Black expat. And so I'm so excited to have my sis here because we're going to
write
this down and just reminding folks that anti-Blackness is a global enterprise, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also it is the labor of our African ancestors that has provided for most of the global world the funding for enterprise and industry, right?
Absolutely.
And so like when we talk about the folks in the diaspora and what that means, the history of it, and even the current state. And so I think this is why this conversation is so important. But before we get into the episode,
it's time for the Blackest Thing.
Made it out the neighborhood, made it to the pros. Head, shoulders, knees, toes. It's a triple threat, something you don't know.
I gotta ask you, what's the Blackest thing you've done this week already? The Blackest thing.
You know, I don't even know the name of it, but the Blackest thing I did was like 15 minutes before this phone call. I'm staying with some Cameroon people and they made me some vegetables. It took me to the motherland so quick. It was delicious and it was fire. It had palm oil in it and it got my whole life.
And but so, like, what were these vegetables? Were these vegetables you had never seen before?
It's some kind of green, and they were squeezing it and getting all the water out, and then they put it together with some tomatoes, and it's fire. It was great. And so that was the Blackest thing I did all week.
I want to go back to something. I'm so glad you brought up the fact that our ancestors made decisions similar to yours. Mm-hmm. And in you leaving the United States, feeling that you had to make some of those same decisions, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's something really powerful in saying that out loud, because often we get a lot of messages about progress. Mm-hmm. And as a Black woman in the United States, having only lived in the United States, you know, you have people who say things like, oh, well, they, you know, there's a holiday for Martin Luther King, or they put Dr. Maya Angelou on the quarter. Like, things are getting better, right? and the tension of naming what is progress. I don't know how I would define that today, right? And I think sometimes that is, we are gaslit as Black people by this concept of progress, right? Like, things are getting better, but I'm listening to you, sis, say that you feel like you've had to make some of the same choices people had to make 40, 50, 60 years ago. Yeah. So what we name that as progress, there's a tension there that I think we need to recognize. Would you agree? Or, I mean, I don't know. I just felt like we really need, I wanted to honor what you just said.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like there's like the macro version of progress and then the micro version. So let's talk about the macro version first. So like when you're thinking about, or when I think about progress in the States, I grew up in white evangelical spaces. And so that was a big reason of why I had to leave, and just because it was just too much. And then I also have a doctorate degree. I earned my doctorate when I was 26. Like, I'm very smart. And also I was not able to get into where I was able, where I was qualified to get into because of white supremacy and whiteness. And so where is the space for me and people like me in America to feel safe and to be paid what I'm worth and to also have a life and a quality of life that I enjoy and want? It's not there without me having to bust my, I can cuss, right? I can say bust my ass in America. Like, and I tried, I put in the work and I still couldn't do it. And when I get so furious about the systems of oppression in the States, like, it should not be like this. It shouldn't. I shouldn't be worried about going to the hospital and having a bill for thousands of dollars that I can't afford. Like, it shouldn't have to be like this, but it is. So that's what I think about with the macro progress. That it's like, so many folks are like, but we are moving. But I was like, at the speed of a snail, we need to pick this up. And the fatigue that people have, the racial battle fatigue, the fatigue of fighting all the stuff.
What weighs on us? What, I mean, right. I don't mean to cut you off, but I try to like make this point anytime I can make it. When you say we are moving at the speed of a snail, people often will say, well, progress, change takes time. And I love to be able to say to folks now, especially as we are living through the COVID-19 pandemic, how fast did it take for us to put our whole lives online?
Literally. It's not fast enough.
You get what I'm saying? So that is my new line. When people say, well, change takes time.
Literally. Like, who? And the thing is like, people, like, only the people who are not dying are giving this excuse of it's taking time. Like, our lives are on the line, y'all. And people right now, and I talk to my therapist about this a lot, because first of all, shameless plug, go to therapy. But like, we have like,
go to
therapy. As I said, go to therapy. Get your life together.
There ain't no shame. It.
No, go and pay the money.
I wish you didn't have to pay the money. Don't make me make a list of shit that we shouldn't be paying
reparations.
For. Reparations.
Yes. It's ridiculous. But it goes under the thing of like, why, you know, life is not safe for us. So the people, though, that are making these excuses for, I'm going to call them excuses or reasons, whatever, saying that progress takes time, just be a little more patient. I thought I was the only one saying this. I was like, I don't feel safe. And I am slowly dying on the inside. And people around me are dying. My brother died. Like, and their lives are ending, and it's devastating. So as I'm learning how to grieve through the death of my brother, through the death of so many people in the world right now, of famous people, not famous people, like, it's insane. And then we have folks whose lives are not in danger talking about just be a little bit more patient. And I want to punch them all in the throat, because that is the most disrespectful thing that you could possibly say to someone who is concerned about eating and sleeping and pooping and feeding their families and like getting a roof over their head and making sure that they're safe. Like, I'm not asking to go to Mars. I'm asking for healthcare. to make sure that I stay alive. Like, it's insane. It's disrespectful.
There's a lot to motivate us to leave.
Who's ready for some Black history?
This is your Black History Moment.
All right, so do they have Martin Luther King Day in China? Is that a thing?
And some of these Chinese people, they be like, my favorite line over here is they're like, but Martin Luther King, that means no racism in America. Yeah. And I'm like, fam, no.
He did it. He fixed it. The reason why I bring up Dr. King is because I always like, you know, this segment we have is what is Black history now? Mm-hmm. And we are our ancestors' wildest dreams. We are right. Part of Black history today. Like the things we're doing today mm-hmm. is Black history. And so yep. part of processing that is also naming what our ancestors did before us. And so our Black history moment this week really is that, you know, MLK gets celebrated this week in the United States. It's not a global mm-hmm. thing. And
right.
I mean, I know I have feelings, but before I share my feelings, I'd love to hear more of yours. So you're saying in China, it's not a thing. They Dr. King already fixed racism. What else did you notice?
And I mean, like China, like they don't have Thanksgiving. They don't have Christmas either because they were like, no, we have communism. Why do we need Jesus? And I was like, fair.
And especially they don't need white Jesus. That is not necessary.
I grew up in white church and that is a whole other podcast because that's tell you. That's why I'm in therapy for the rest of my life is because of white church. Anyway, you asked me about Martin Luther King. So they do not have this person. They know of him and they think that he fixed racism. One of the things that was super devastating to Chinese people is, of course, like, you know, there is the firewall and things. And so very little information gets in unless you have a VPN, like, and you have to be a certain social status in order to have it because it comes with money and blah, blah, blah. So MLK
Maybe you should tell people what VPN is.
So I live in China. China is it's a closed country. So in order to control the 1.7 billion people, there is not a lot of quote unquote freedom. And that is another podcast on like what freedom actually means, because is either country really free if you think about it? But one of the things that they do is they strictly control and censor information. And folks who like me, foreigners, folks that have money, and folks that are just curious of the world outside of China, and the information that they are given would need to have a VPN in order to get into Google, to use yahoo.com, to all of the social medias, you have to have a VPN. And so folks that have a VPN are able to get regular information. So I have one. And it's not like it's illegal, but like it just is what it is. It's just an extra precaution. So yeah, because of that, folks do not have information coming in. But it's interesting because I've had phenomenal conversations on racism, blackness, whiteness, discrimination, because for some reason, they did let in the story of George Floyd. And I was shocked. So I was devastated and grieving myself as a Black person. And these Chinese kids were like, we thought this stopped. Why? And I was like, you need to be like, and they're like, will they do? And it was devastating to me because Chinese kids would be coming up to me. They're like, so I'm not white, because a lot of the Chinese folks, they think that they are because they're light. They're like, I'm not white. So will I be safe if I go to America? And I cannot say you will be safe in my own country. And that's devastating to me. And so I've had a lot of conversations since George Floyd because of they just want to know. And my answers are unfortunate. Like, I wish that I could say something different, but I can't. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, yeah, that's interesting too, this idea of like selectively, if that was information that, and everyone in the whole world needs to know about what happened to Breonna and to George and to all the people who are victims of state-sanctioned murder, but wow, just the idea of like, of what purpose would the government have had to say, we want our citizens to know? Now, off the top, I'm going to say that's because they want, the Chinese government wants its citizens to think that America is trash, and America is trash. The United States is trash. So I wouldn't be optimistic that it was like, we want our citizens to know this because we want them to be concerned about justice as much as definitely. We're like, no, we want them to know this so they don't never, you know,
they don't ever leave. They're like, no, China's number one. Yeah, because look what they're doing in America. And I'd be like, yeah. That's kind of the reason why I left, is because I didn't see. I was one of the folks and I told people, I was like, look, if Donald Trump gets in office, I'm out. And it's not because of him per se, but because there are enough people who think he's a good idea. And that means that my body and my mind is valued in my own home country, and I have a choice. And so it's absolutely terrifying to me to move abroad. Like, it's not a decision for the weary or for the leery. Like, it's just, it's an incredibly difficult decision. However, and also, when I started to expand my community of people, I noticed that Black people have been everywhere for millennia. Like, I remember when I was, because you were talking about MLK, I went to his memorial the statue of DC, right? Several years ago when it first opened. And I was looking at his statements. And I knew, because I didn't grow up with a whole bunch of knowledge about Black history specifically. Like, that knowledge came in my 20s when I was working on my dissertation. But when I was walking through the memorial, I was looking around and I was like, I know about I Have a Dream, but fam, did you know MLK went to Norway? He was studying abroad and he went to like these kinds. I was like, fam, he's been traveling. But
there are pictures of him in Jamaica in a hot tub.
He's living his best life. And then my favorite statement, which I found, but I lost it last week.
Well, he was in Norway because he got the Nobel Peace Prize, right?
Right. Right.
That part.
So he traveled several places. I can't remember all the places that he went, but like, he left America. Then James Baldwin was like, peace, I'm out. And then he was like, and then he gets to France and he's like, y'all better come over here because it's dope. And
before James was there, Josephine was like, I'm right. So what you're saying here, just so I want us to be clear, we're talking about this action of Black people exiting the United States is not a new one. It's not like, it was not like in 2019, Black people were like, you know what, let me get a passport. A lot of our ancestors made that decision.
They did. And I think even like Coltrane's sister, like, changed her name to something Buddhist. I don't even know, but like, she was living her best life. And then
Angela Davis. I mean, yeah, part of Angela Levin was also like the feds, like the FBI,
but she also left for whatever her reasons were. The thing.
Oh, wait, hold on. Tina Turner ain't effing with us no more. I don't think you could ever get Tina to come back to the States.
No. And folks are buying up proper Black folks, are buying, like, basketball players, Beyonce, Jay-Z, all the people are purchasing property abroad and not telling anybody where their little mansions are because they have found jewels all over the world. It's incredible, but it is scary. The other thing I was going to say was, I'm currently reading only Black authors, and I've been doing this for about 2.5 years. I'm about to expand, but that's whatever. So like, I was reading Isabel Wilkerson's, she wrote two books, Warmth of the Other Sun, which is about the Black American Great Migration out of the South. And I even talked with my grandparents because they also, this is their story. And when I was reading Wilkerson's book, I almost cried because the same discomfort and mental gymnastics and conclusions that my ancestors had to come to as they left the South to go North are the exact same questions I asked myself as I was leaving Denver to come over here to China. The exact same. And so there is something that inside myself who was like, you know what? I think there is another place where I will feel safe, where I will be able to make my own life, but no one is doing it. But also, this is the best move for me. And I want to bring my people so that we can have collective liberation in a new space. And so that's why I do what I do. And that's why I post what I post. And I am very intentional about just sharing the everyday things about my life, all of the malarkey, all of the stuff, because my life is not what y'all see on these social media, Instagram, little people, the influencers at these nice restaurants and all this nice stuff. That's not my life. Like, I live extremely modestly. I have 5 pairs of pants. I have all of this. I'm a minimalist. I live in a tiny shoebox in an apartment, and I run a business. I teach 200 kids a week. I am living my best life. I paid off all my student loans. I do what I do abroad, and I would not be able to live this life if I had stayed where I was. I love Denver. Kale salad and the white stuff is wonderful. White people hobbies are great, but also salad. It's delicious. The one with the pine nuts and the goat cheese. Wow. It's amazing. Like, I miss it. I do. And I had to change that out for soy sauce, but also, like, this is where I have grieved, and this is where I've healed, and this is where I have found myself. And I'm not the same person as when I left. And I'm eternally grateful for China.
You know, when we consider how many people have been leaving, Black people have been leaving the US, I think it's also important to talk about what values and principles and beliefs we are bringing with us when we are leaving. And one of the things I'm going to ask you about this, but I want to ground this in some history. So way before Abraham Lincoln was the great emancipator, and y'all can't see me, but I'm using scarecrows because that's ain't what he was.
He was.
Lies they told. Okay. Abraham Lincoln was like, how are we going to get rid of these ninjas? Like, they got to go. And he got money from Congress. And so that was a whole thing. Well, I guess that just gets disappeared because he, like, signed the Emancipation Proclamation, which did not free the slaves that he did not want to.
He didn't want to do that.
But there's this move, right? It's an immigrant move. It's a, like, send them back. Mm-hmm. And through various stages, some of the enslaved Black folks here in the United States indeed got to leave the United States. And one such group were the people who went to Liberia. And so around 1820, right, the American Colonization Society has established some free societies in various places, one of them being Liberia, right? And here Black people had been enslaved. And honestly, I don't know how they were selected, but basically put on boats and like, y'all go back to the continent. Mm-hmm. Yes, great, green light, all the things. Except for when they get there, there's a reason why the capital city of Liberia is Monrovia.
Right.
So how y'all gonna come to Africa and be like, nah, you know what we need? We need to name this place what?
Right. Why?
So I think we need to speak to that, right? We need to speak to Black people have motivation to say we need to get the hell up off the U.S. Full stop. Uh-huh. But what kind of ideology, you know what I'm saying? What are the values you're bringing when you exit? And that's what I wanted to speak to you about. Like, do you feel like in this Black expat movement, are we coming with Black liberation? Or are we coming back? Are we coming with a colonial settler like mindset?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So many things. Okay. So I'm going to take a 30,000 and then we're going to get to the thing real quick. Whenever I travel abroad, I always ask folks, what is it like to be Black where you are? And even on my podcast, I ask the same question. And I was in London, which is the dopest city. And it was 11 at night, and I found this dude, and he was a driver. He's from the Caribbean. based on his accent. And I was like, can I ask you a question? What is it like to live here? And he goes, I love it. It's great. And he goes, can I ask you a question? I was like, sure. And he literally told me, he was like, we over here read the news. We want to know, why are Black people still in America? Why? And I was like, I don't know. And they were like, we don't understand. Get out, because it's not going to get any better. And it's not. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to tell everybody I know what you just said. And he goes, yeah, sure. I was like, thank you very much. And so based on my research, my dissertation was in like trying to get Black folks to study abroad more in college. And one of the things was like, we don't see us traveling abroad and so, or studying abroad. And so we don't think that it is for us. So that I did my research in mid, it's like 2014, 13, something like that. It's almost 10 years ago. And there's been a massive switch in Black folks getting passports, doing the bare, just to get out, to go somewhere. And there is a piece of liberation about going, just leaving. I don't care where you go, just try it and see. But within traveling abroad, there's lots of different like subcategories. There's like the person who goes to travel abroad, but they stay at the resort. For me, that's not what I feel is helpful to anybody. But like, if that's what you want to do, live your best life. Then there's folks who are the social Instagram influencers, and they have these 5-star stuff, and they're living their best life, and their legs are shaped, and they look beautiful. And that is not my life, but
wait,
that's what they
not the shaved legs. Do they go
shaved legs? No, 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 I don't be shaving. I do not care. Mm-mm. And I am hairy, and I do not shave. I do not care. And if that's what you want to do, live your best life. Then there's the folks who are just extended travelers for business. And if that's what you want to do, great. And there's so many opportunities. If you ask your boss, hey, can I travel and live abroad? You have options in that way. Then there's folks, and expat is officially expatriate. So it's people who have left for long periods of time. So I'm in my 4th year now, and I live a very regular life abroad, very modest life. And I just do what I do. So that's the 30,000. Now, as far as the collective liberation, there's a couple things that are important to think about. One, when a Black person has struggled in the States, just life is hard, and you finally go somewhere and you realize the margaritas are $2.50. My hotel room, $15. My flight was less than my budget for food for the month or 2 months. You can live your best life and spend a little money and just live like a queen and king. And that's what folks are doing when they travel abroad. And that's a trend right now. When I travel abroad, I live very low to the ground. I wear my little backpack, and I wear my little elastic band shorts, and I hit the pavement literally, and I walk cities for miles all day, every day. So everywhere that I've been, I know that city very well, know that country. And because I talk to the locals, I live locally, I eat the local food. I'm not going to Hard Rock Cafe. I abhor cruise ships, and I don't do that stuff because it's so consumeristic. And I remember going to, I was in Fiji for 12 hours because I was headed over to Australia because. And like, when I was in there, like the tour guide, the guy was like, I'll put you in my little truck and we can go. And I was like, it's a great way to get trafficked, but I'm on it. So let's get in the little truck and go. And so he took us to somebody's
private. Wait, everybody travel safely.
But also travel locally because it's cheap. That little truck took us to a private beach, and it was the most beautiful water. There were 2 people outside, and then there were like these little huts and little small houses, and then this big ass intercontinental hotel. How the hell? How did you find this piece of land? And the folks that were working in the hotel were the locals from the village. And I was like, this is whiteness in this little beach in Fiji. And I was furious. And so when I think about traveling, I immediately ask, what is happening to the locals? And because it is so wonderful to be able to travel abroad and to enjoy a place of privilege. It is relaxing. It's, you feel great because you can just throw money at people, literally throw money at people, and they will do so much.
And I think it's just important to recognize that and this isn't limited to Black folks, for any people who experience a certain amount of oppression,
yes,
we also have the ability to oppress. You get what I'm saying? And yes. I think for me as a Black woman, that's been such a powerful lesson. Because I mean, to me, mm-hmm. especially in the United States, I'm low on, I'm at the bottom, right? I mean, well, arguably we can say I'm cisgender, right? So Black trans women are the least protected people in the US. And I think sometimes in our oppression, we can forget mm-hmm. that we can still move forward violent enterprises. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And it's furious. It is very counterintuitive to be somebody of color who travels with a hat of whiteness on. And I see it all the time. And I'm torn because I don't want to be like pointing fingers at Black people. You need to do better when you travel abroad, because I'm grateful when anybody leaves America for any extended period of time, for any period of time, because you got out. And also I challenge us to look at the systems of whiteness, because it is similar in every corner of the world. It's whiteness just looks a little bit different, but it's always there.
I always tell people it changes the shape a little bit, right? But it's still mm-hmm. the thing. Yep. But it just smells a little different.
It just smells a little different.
Still an orange, you know. It's still a papaya.
Yeah. It's everywhere. And I mean, I've been to 31 countries now, and which is so shocking to me. But like, and I'm not rich, y'all. I eat rice and cabbage, and then I travel. That's what I do. And so like, you can do it too. But I mean, I was in Indonesia, and they like whiteness for skin cream was here. And then I went to like in the top of the mountains in Argentina, and they were selling Coca-Cola with rotten ass teeth. Why are y'all up here? It's whiteness. It's disgusting to me. But it's money, and people will sell their souls literally for the white dollar. And I do my absolute best to not support it when I travel abroad. But you have to be very intentional, and you have to think about it, and to be wise and kind to other people, and to literally ask the locals, do you like this? How do you feel when you see foreigners here acting like this, buying this, wearing this? I can't tell you how many times. Oh, and I was in Thailand and watching all these white people and Black people wearing the little bubble pants, acting like they some kind of woke. And I was like, first of all, these pants were made in China. They're not even here. And these people are selling themselves. It's technically connected to sex trafficking. And also, you guys aren't reading and paying attention to the cues. Like, you can't do that. But is it worth whining and complaining and getting on my soapbox about that when someone leaves? Because I'm thrilled when somebody leaves. I'm like,
well, I think it's go like naming the tension.
Careful. Yeah, there's always going to be tension when you're a person of color. Absolutely.
And I think kind of just to move us to our last question, but just like, we get it. We deserve to be fully human, but also just being cognizant that other people deserve that. And what I refer to as the trifecta is white supremacy, patriarchy, and capitalism that have worked globally against the people of the global majority. The world is a Black and brown planet, right?
The whole place.
And how do we restore our humanity by restoring other people's humanity alongside us? So the last question I have for you is, I am Black and bulldog tongue, Mississippi. I don't know why I picked Mississippi. Yes. It feels like the worst place to be Black, but you know, it's all bad. But I decide I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
So I get a passport. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We know that step. What are the next 2, 3, 4 steps I should take if I decide I want to become a Black expat?
Sure. Let me answer the one question before, and then I'll answer that one. First, that was my soapbox, but I wanted to share a couple simple things that I do when I am abroad in order to stop with the whiteness. One, pay people what they're worth. Like if you see somebody and they are selling some earrings, pay full price because they're feeding their family, unless it's outrageous. Pay a little bit extra. Tip people. Live in hostels, homestays, cheaper places, on the edge of town. Stay away from these large hotels. Airbnbs are supporting small businesses and families, even though they be doing some sketch shit in America, but abroad, it's incredible. Eat the local food. Try it. Eat the street food. As long as there's fire, so you can, my rule is if it's fire, I see it and I smell it and it's currently cooking and it's hot, then you won't, people probably won't get sick. Buy local. Don't go to Hard Rock. Don't travel to Buenos Aires and then go to Hard Rock Cafe. Eat the food in the corner with grandma and grandpa and live and walk everywhere. Talk to the taxi drivers. Ask them, take me, and I tell them, take me to where the local people shop. That's where I want to just walk around and see. Yes. And so those are the things that I do. And also, like, when you travel in that way, your price for traveling is cut in a fraction. Like, I traveled 5 days in Thailand. It was $250 plus a ticket. Like, you can do this too and rack up your passport. So anyway, Black person in Mississippi gets a passport. What are the next two steps? One, pick a place, buy the ticket and go. So many people are like waiting for like the sky to open and tell them which place to go. And that's not like, pick one and try it. And if you hate it, you're only going to be there 5 days. It's fine. And so in order to plan a trip, like one of my favorite apps is called Momondo. It's M-O-M-O-N-D-O. And you can be like, look, I got $400. Which, where from my city can I go for $400 or $800? And it'll be like, this one, you can buy the ticket now. Then find a place to sleep. I am team hostel all day. Some folks cannot do that. And that's, a hostel is like where you bunk with lots of people in one room. And it's, you know, a hostel in Thailand is $2 and $3. And then get you some tennis shoes, buy some Birkenstocks, get a backpack that it looks a little grungy because then people don't think you have any money, and walk and get you the little Google on your phone, offline map, so you don't have to pay the extra money, and go somewhere and just walk around and see and smell. And if it smells good, try it. And if it looks a little weird, then don't eat it. And then live. That's it. But so many people, just like with any sort of big change in your life, like so many folks get stuck at that one spot of picking a thing to do next. And I have so many friends who, like when I lived in Kentucky, but when I was finishing my bachelor's degree, and then I went to Denver, and then I was in Denver 4 years because that's where I'm from. And then I moved over here to China. So that was 7 years ago. And they are still talking about, I'm gonna get out of my hometown. I'm on my way. I was like, fam, that was 7 years ago. We need to do better. Like, go. Just try. Just try. Yeah. So that's my advice. Absolutely.
Well, I'm so thankful to you taking time out of your day to share, to enlighten, to empower us.
Yes.
And remember to please say Black, y'all.
Thanks for listening to the Please Say Black podcast, and I am so excited to be your host, Joaquina Reed. I hope today's episode really connected to you in a deep way, and I want to encourage you to check out the episode notes. You can find out more information about me, how you can support our podcast, and of course, find out more information about our dope guests. How we gonna get down? Lastly, make sure you follow us over at Instagram at Please Say Black. I want to leave you with this blessing from our tremendous ancestor, Malcolm X, that says, I pray that God bless you in everything you do. I pray that you will grow intellectually so that you can understand the problems of the world and where you fit into it, into that world picture. And I pray that all the fear that has ever been in your heart will be taken out. So, stay black, and be blessed.
Now, if you don't mind, I would like to get a little rest now.
Catch y'all next time.